Hey everybody, I'm Nick Layton.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.
Hi, this is Marion Nessel. I'm the Paulette Goddard Professor of Nutrition, Food Studies, and Public Health at New York University and a longtime fan of Heritage Radio.
Like Marion, you too can support Heritage Radio Network, a member-based nonprofit radio station operating out of Bushwick, Brooklyn.
I've been on it countless times. I love being interviewed. The interviewers are always really well prepared and fun to talk to about the issues that matter to me the most, about how we can change our food system to one that's healthier for people and the environment. It's just invaluable to have an independent radio station that's dealing with these issues. I think it's a wonderful, wonderful asset.
Support Heritage Radio Network by becoming a member today. Go to heritageradionetwork.org and click on the beating heart to donate.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association, real education for people who believe in real food. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com.
I'm Erin Fairbanks, host of The Farm Report. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Short and hot with Chef Family.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to Sharp and Hot. I am your host, Emily Peterson, broadcasting to you live from Roberta's Pizza in Bushwick, Brooklyn. This is episode number 137 on a beautiful, warm, not too humid July afternoon. Thank you so much for choosing to give me 30 minutes of your day. I am super excited to bring you my guests who have flown here from Berkeley, California to share their new cookbook with us, Karima Kemp. Camel and Clint Marsh, authors of the new Troll Cookbook. Thanks so much for coming.
Thank you.
Thank you.
So I get sent lots and lots of cookbooks. And so some of them I'm never going to pick up. You know, like the gluten-free paleo cocktail book is one it just doesn't call out to me. And a couple of weeks ago, I went to the studio offices and there's piles of cookbooks because Heritage Radio gets sent. If I get sent one cookbook, Heritage gets 10. And in that pile, there was the Troll Cookbook with this really cool, beautiful typography, like handwritten kind of Hobbit-esque writing. And I was like, ooh, I want to see that. And I picked it up and I opened it and it has the most beautiful illustrations and it is a cookbook written by trolls. And I was like, I have got to talk to these people because everything about this is my sensibility. So first of all, thank you for making the book. And maybe Karima, if you could walk us through your concept and how you came to make something so whimsical and beautiful.
Oh, thank you. No, I mean, this project is a labor of love. Clint and I live in our imaginations. All of our work is about, you know, finding ways to connect with your imagination and also manifest it, creating magic from your dreams and making it walk in the world and making it real in the world. So we set out to make a cookbook that was about creative courage, essentially, with the idea that cooking is a form of creativity that everybody has the opportunity to practice many times a day. and it's simple ingredients. There's very easy parameters around it. And so within this boundary of food, you can be wild and brave and really dig into your magic. And so that was the premise of the book. And then all of the beauty that we poured into making it kind of came from that idea. Actually, my illustrations, I work a lot with a very limited palette. They're all painted with four or five earth pigments per illustration and in one sitting. I just wanted some of that creative abandon and spontaneity that the trolls had in also manifesting, like, you know, from the recipes to the artwork, to have that really clear and expressed. So, yeah, that was the dream.
So are you both, or one or both of you, cooks in your real life?
Yeah, well, I grew up in foodie Berkeley, actually. My mom had a little shop next door to Chez Panisse. So in the very, very early days of the Chez, you know, I was under the tables and coloring on the paper table covers, you know. And Berkeley Farmers Market, Slow Food Movement, all of that is really kind of the cauldron that cooked me up. So with the recipes and the culture of food that's in the book, I mean, that was, you know, these are the recipes that we've been feeding our families with. And yeah.
And you mentioned that, we, you know, feeling like we live in a culture, we were talking off air for the listeners, but you mentioned living in a culture where you consult the internet or television to learn how to do some basic skills. And that was sort of the impetus of getting this book put together, right?
Yeah, well, just, I mean, we live in an age where, you know, you Google how to build a fire or how to make a barbecue, you know. And I mean, fire and the history of fire, our control over fire predates the history of man, you know. People were playing with fire and cooking and nourishing themselves with it and keeping warm and evolving before they were people. So
yeah,
it just seems like if we've lost our connection to that and need internet mediated, you know, basic human skills, that it might be time to have a little fun with.
I read once that the success of cooking television was because of fire, because if you were, this would be back when there was a days of channel surfing instead of everything being on demand. But if you were scanning channels and you saw fire and someone cooking and searing meat in particular, you'll stop and watch because there's something in your mitochondrial DNA that's like food. Like, oh, I want to watch that. And it doesn't matter who you are or what you were looking for. If you were looking for Days of Our Lives or like Mission Impossible, it doesn't matter. People would stop and look at that. And I was like, that really stuck with me.
It's like the hearth, you know, it's our souls just kind of naturally want to congregate around the hearth. That's where we're safe and families get, you know, music, family, all this stuff that's the heart of it. So
why trolls? If the food came first and the skills came first and the fearlessness and the courage part, which I love, and I want to talk more about that too, but what was the link? Why not unicorns or fairy godmothers or fish or whatever?
We have this fantasy world that we're in already because we worked together with this shop that Karima started years ago, and it's got fairy theme to it and or a lot of fairy and whimsical things are part of the store, and we were talking about what might be the most creative fairy of them all, and we thought that the trolls were, because they don't think twice, you know. They're going to, if they want to achieve something, they just reach out, grab it, do it. And we thought, well, that's the most creative and the most courageous fairy creature of them all, and so it was a natural fit for our Creative Courage cookbook.
Tell me about this store.
Oh, well, Castle in the Air, I started it 15 years ago. And it's a complicated story that involves my desire to make art in the world and have a safe place for it. I was a young, young dreamer. Like, seems like most of New York.
Yeah.
And I came to New York with my artwork and my books and was told that they were dreamy and wonderful, but not commercial. I don't know what isn't commercial about a troll cookbook, honestly, but, you know. But, and so I went back to Berkeley feeling defeated. Like, I had all these dreams and that I wanted, you know, to make magic in the world. And I had basically been told, like, good luck with that. You know, no one's going to help you. And I did the classic, you know, depressed 20-something for a brief period. And then at some point, this like little red hen hatched in me. And I'm like, fine, then I'm going to do it myself. And I've really embraced the DIY ethos. And the first step, though, was I knew I couldn't do it alone. I needed community. And so I decided, well, if I'm a dreamer that wants a safe place to make my art, I bet there are plenty other people that fit that description, and so I'll make a fortress for them. We'll call it Castle in the Air. And in the last 15 years, it has actually become a community center. We have classes. We publish our books. We have a beautiful shop downstairs, and people come now from all over the world to fly in the castle and in the air and make art. And really, the staff who work there and the teachers who teach and the customers who give their hearts and share their work with us every day, you know, that it has a whole life of its own now.
I love that. And I love the idea. Well, let me ask you, did you already know that there was a community out there? Like, were they your friends? And so you kind of knew.
I did have a community of friends. But, you know, as an artist, I don't know if the creative spirit, I think it rarely comes without insecurity. And so I would look at my friends and, you know, think, oh, they're so much braver than I, you know, or just how do they do, you know, and saw them kind of courageously living their artistic lives. And I really wanted to dive in, but anyway, so opened the doors and sure enough, they all rallied. You know, we'd stay up all night decorating and making fantasies of, you know, the shop is kind of famous for its transformations, you know, for the holiday season. We do something we call the Grand Transformation, and we'll be up till literally 24 hours just decorating, making magic, and all the friends come, you know, to do it.
I just love this. So I am a born and bred New Yorker, and that cynicism is so real. It's so gatekeepery. And publishing is one of the last places where that exists. And I was listening to a podcast yesterday called the Success Insider Podcast, which is part of Success Magazine, which is great. It's a little cheesy, but I really like it. And there was a woman whose name is, I want to say Mel. I will look it up at the break. But she was talking about how in the age of the internet, so we have this thing that we can like turn to and say, like, how do you make a fire? And there's 50,000 different pages for you, and you can find the one that's just right for you. That it takes away this isolation feeling, because anybody can have a shingle anywhere you want. But I feel like that's only true in most spaces, but as an artist who's like actually physically making stuff, like, you want people around, you know, you want to have a space where you can go. And why I think people gravitate towards yoga studios or retreats, like writer retreats and that sort of thing, because you want to feel like you're not crazy. You know, there are other people like you in your community.
Oh, it's huge. Yeah, you know,
we're social creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And the trolls are social creatures too. And I think that's why it's easy for people to make this leap too with the Troll Cookbook. They recognize community or family in the pages and in the recipes. They think, oh, I grew up, I liked this food because my parents made it, my grandparents made it. I want to make that for my family or share it with my friends. And so that became a big part of the cookbook too, is the community aspect.
I think giving people, we have to take a quick break, but giving people a sense of community and also bringing magic into a world where, And I will say that as a member, however small the sliver of the media I am, is I hold the media accountable for a lot of this feeling of like, what is going on in the world? Like, I would much rather bury myself in a magical, whimsical cookbook at this point than know what is really, you know, not that I want to pull the wool over my eyes, and I am a news junkie, but sometimes it's really comforting to have something to escape into, and it's much more pleasant. Pay attention to. Okay, so let's take a quick break, and then we're going to dive into some recipes, and you're going to tell us how to fearlessly make yogurt and sourdough.
Okay.
Today's program was brought to you by the Nutritional Therapy Association. The Nutritional Therapy Association, NTA, is a vocational nutrition school that develops, trains, and certifies nutritional therapy practitioners and nutritional therapy consultants to understand and reverse the tragic and unsuspected effects of the modern diet on their clients based on their bio-individual nutritional needs. There's no perfect diet for everyone. Their philosophy is that the myriad of health problems that plague modern society result from weakness in the body's physiological foundations as a result of poor nutrition, and that everyone deserves to be healthy. Throughout NTA seminars, students access a wide range of educational tools and techniques that help identify and correct nutritional imbalances from a holistic perspective, emphasizing the importance of properly prepared, nutrient-dense whole foods. Their organization was founded on the teachings of Weston A. Price and the science of Dr. Francis M. Pottinger. For more information, visit nutritionaltherapy.com. With the seeds on
your land. Welcome back to Sharp and Hot. I am here with Kareem McCamel and Clint Marsh, and they are the minds behind the Troll Cookbook, but really the trolls have written the cookbook, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Come straight from the trolls.
So there is this air of fearlessness about the book that I love, because I teach a lot of cooking classes, and fear is so real for people.
Fear in general in life is real for people.
So what are some things that the trolls can provide to get people through that initial sense of hesitation?
The recipes are all based around really basic elements of food, and we have a section on each one. We talk about grains and the history of grains and why they're important to civilization, why they're important today. We talk about milk, all the things that it can be made into and where it comes from and why people enjoy it. And then once you get those basic building blocks, then almost by accident, you're making something already. You're cooking with it. You're doing something very basic with it. And then you build on that. And whenever somebody does that, just like with art or anything in life, then they just gain that confidence. They just get a little bit more boost in their creativity and in their self-confidence, and then they go on to the next thing.
I love seeing that moment in people's eyes when they've done it, when they're like, I did it. And I'm sure it's in teaching art, you see that also.
Yeah, I mean, just the power of really understanding the essential, the core elements that you're working with in any medium, you know. And I think with food, we have especially, there's so much glamour around it and celebrity, and we try so much to promote this idea that, you know, this it's an art that some people possess a magic and other people don't. That when you break it down to, you know, you take away the glamour and you're just like, these are the essential spices of life. Let's have fun. And you really get an elemental understanding, then you're free to play.
So I've never made my own yogurt.
Mm.
I have tried fermenting. We used to ferment kimchi at the restaurant that I cut my teeth at after culinary school. And I have tried and failed to make both sourdough and chili garlic paste. So I'm hesitant to try to make my own yogurt because I don't want to fail. Like there is no immunity, I don't think, from that fear of failure. And I am a professional culinary instructor, and I still am like, oh, I could just buy it. So walk me through why and how I should make yogurt. As someone who goes so far, I've raised my own chickens for meat because I want to know where my food comes from, but I've outsourced my yogurt making.
So, I mean, yogurt is it's kind of a litmus test for the stability of your warmth, I guess.
You know? Okay.
It's like a, you know, if there were a thing to say about yogurt is that it makes itself. All you need to do is provide kind of a consistent holding for it while it makes itself. And that's tricky for people. You know, we are super volatile creatures that, you know, have drafty lives. And so you get you start with your beautiful milk, you inoculate it with yogurt culture or with some of your yogurt that you've made in the past. And then patience and keeping it warm and letting it kind of grow on its own. Without meddling and just by having this blanket of consistent temperature. That's all that's required. And yet somehow it is sometimes difficult.
Like I'm going through my mental inventory. I'm like, I don't know if I can do this. Like, yeah. I'm good at, like, stir fry, you know, like where everything's fast and loud and hot and then it's done. But
yeah.
Like patience and warmth. I'm like,
patience and warmth. I know. And, you know, I mean, I'm one of the more volatile creatures. So yeah, I failed at yogurt, and it's so disappointing. You have your gorgeous organic milk, and then it's gone.
So how do you know you failed when you look at it?
You know, it's very hard to fail, actually. I mean, you just, sometimes you have milk that's sour, little sour milk, you know? Or it's too runny, or, you know, it doesn't quite set the way you want, but still all edible.
Yeah. You know? I'm going to try to do this because there's no reason for me not to do it. So what are the practical steps? I've read that you can have a red igloo cooler, you know, and put your milk in the mason jar in the cooler, and the cooler will help moderate the temperature.
Yeah, a little insulation somewhere. We have an oven with a pilot light, and you can get, you know, with enough buffer around with blankets, you can kind of keep it warm.
So I don't have any air conditioning in my house. So my current warm dining room, which is sort of the least used room, because the idea that we would all gather in a dining room at this point in our life is just... I was just talking to a friend who was like, you don't all sit down for dinner? And I was like, am I doing grown-up life wrong? No. We get together for breakfast. But the dining room would be a good place to do it because it's very still and quiet, and I actually get a lot of writing and work done in there because it's this kind of subdued space. So if I go to the farmer's market, could I purchase somebody else's yogurt and use that as my starter?
Yeah.
Okay, so I put a little bit of that into my beautiful local... Should I use raw milk? Not that I would, because it's, you know, highly illegal in New Jersey, and it's like doing a drug deal. But just if I was, had some access to it.
You know, I don't, because when you get a warm bath and you let it sit for a while, bacteria, that's the ultimate environment for a bacteria. And as much as, I mean, I am, you know, a wild troll at heart, but also there are some things that we've learned.
Right, you know? Right. Yeah, I know. Raw milk's a tough one.
A tough one.
But you also write about buttermilk, which is another favorite sort of subject of mine. So describe the different types of buttermilk, because I think most people think what they get off the shelf in the yellow and blue box is buttermilk, but in reality that's not true buttermilk, right?
Well, I mean, there are three different, I guess, ways to make buttermilk. I would say there is a buttermilk, and then there is a lot of language to describe other things that we make that is sour and can be kind of replaced in recipes. The buttermilk that we love making is just, you know, you take a little buttermilk and inoculate your milk and let it sit. And then if you do it in sour cream, you get creme fraiche. And just these cultured dairies, once you kind of get it. So the Troll Cookbook is really about understanding the heart of the problem, right? The heart of the celebration, I guess. And then going for it. And at some point you're like, oh, we're going to just culture everything. All my dairy, whether it's a goat milk or a cow milk or a yak milk or a Yeti milk, like we're going to go for this cultured dairy. And then, you know, you make cultured sour cream, cultured yogurt, strain it, eat it, sugar it, make it dessert, spice it up, make it, you know, a dip. And, and you're just free and playing.
That's like, it's so the theme of just go and do. So it's set up seasonally. So right now we are in high summer. What should people be super excited about making from the Troll Cookbook in the middle of the summer?
What we have in Berkeley are these plum trees I think the season is about over now because I've been eating some plum cakes, but you walk down the street and you say, what's that on the bottom of my shoe? Well, it's dessert. So we've been able to, every year, everybody gets really excited about the plums. We go out and you fill a bucket with the plums and you go back home and you mix them up with just a few other ingredients. And every day for a month, you're eating plum cake and you call your friends and they say, I'll bring mine too. Everybody gets fat all summer and it's really nice. And that's what's cool about the Troll Cookbook is that it encourages you to go outside, look around, what's there, is that food, can I eat that? A little bit of investigation, a little bit of research, and then try it, you know. We encourage foraging, and that can be tricky in civilized areas because there's a lot of poisons out there. People like to keep nature at bay, and so be wary of that. Be educated about how your wilderness is being managed in your city, but...
How do you do it? Tell me about foraging in Berkeley.
What's great about Berkeley is you can see all four seasons in one vista. We've got the berries, we've got trees that have fall leaves on them, we've got flowers all the time. And so it's like the people out there, it's just a real mix. It's really good. And so you can go out and pick your plums, pick your flowers, make a salad, make a pie, and enjoy it. It's such a food town. You know, I think Brooklyn's the same way. People are really interested in what they eat, and they are curious about what is unique to their community.
I need to get out to Berkeley.
It's beautiful. I mean, I've started, or have been actually for a few years taking these walks, but I've become quite addicted to them. It's a little 4-mile, you know, loop, and I just, I go from season to season, the harvesting on my walk, so, you know, loquat season, and try and see all the ones that I can reach and if they're ripe yet, and then plum season, and I fill my pockets and walk for another mile eating plums and then find another tree and blackberries and people's lemon verbena and mint, and, you know, then nobody's going to mind if I pull a few lavender heads and stuff them in my pockets and, you know, sniff them on my walk and come home and spread the flowers around. It just becomes a way of interacting with your environment in this, you know, in a sensual way, but through smell and touch, and it's wonderful.
I think anything that gets people in connection with the outside natural world and excited about touching and the sensory and sensual elements of being outside.
Yeah, well, and Clint mentioned, you know, our wild plum situation, which are kind of their plague. I mean, we know, I have so many friends like, oh, these plums are plopping everywhere and my driveway is sticky and my poor car. But then we have this, we've turned it into this real celebration. And, you know, the plum cakes is one thing. And then you get a few, you go rescue someone's driveway and pick as many plums as you can and then stay up all night and jam it. And then in the winter, you know, you're having your plum jam, your taste of summer on your toast every morning.
It's like back to the Little Red Hen too.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, Kareem McCamel, Clint Marsh, thank you so, so much for coming on Sharp and Hot. Thank you for making the trip to Brooklyn.
Oh, our pleasure. This
you
is such
a
magical
week.
Place.
It's a beautiful, beautiful week. The website is trollcookbook.com, and we are almost out of time, but I did want to ask you about Dromedary Press. So you came back from New York kind of hurt and being told no, and your response was to say, I'm going to do it myself. So what is it like, if you could, in 2 minutes or so, what is it like to start and run your own imprint?
Yeah, you know, a lot of reinventing the wheel, I suspect. You know, and which is a wonderful feeling, because you finally figure it out and you can do your celebration dance, and, you know, everybody else in the industry is like, oh, come on. But no, you get to control it, which isn't about control. It's about giving, you know, your true expression. And the thing that I do love about making books the way that we make them is that the whole finished object in your hand is my creative expression manifest the way I have dreamed it. And that is very, very rewarding. So
I just read, I'm guilty of not clicking through to read it, but apparently Barnes & Noble is going to start selling self-published books. Mm. Is Dromedary Press, would you consider that self-publishing?
Technically, I think it is. I mean, we've done, 10 titles or something now, so we're a small press. You know, we've have distribution and things. But yeah, because it's all self. It's all us.
I'm so inspired. I'm inspired by how not anxious you seem to, because I feel like I would be, I mean, I am an anxious ball of nerves, but I credit most of that with being raised in New York. But you seem very grounded about the one foot in front of the other, do it yourself. Even if it means you're inventing the wheel, that's okay too. You're still going to do your dance. And I love that. And I'm going to take some of that magic and whimsy and remind myself that that's all around me all the time. So thank you.
Oh, bless you. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. And I'm going to come to Castle in the Air and take a class too, because I have an undergraduate degree in fine art and I haven't made anything in years. Years and years and years, even though I have a degree and I thought I was going to be a painter. So
yeah.
I have this little tiny book of watercolors that I take on vacation with me, and I make one watercolor painting. That's it. which means that I need some infusion of art back in my life.
Oh.
So for listeners who are in the Bay Area, head to Castle in the Air. More information is at trollcookbook.com. Thank you so much, both of you, for coming on the show.
Thank you.
Thank you so much.
And social media, you guys are on Twitter and Instagram.
Yes, One Castle in the Air.
All right. I'm going to follow you for sure.
Oh, brilliant.
I am at Chef Emily P. I got a sharp and hot hashtag all the way from Germany this week. I'm so excited. Someone is listening in Germany. If you are using Instagram anyway, you can use the hashtag sharp and hot, and I will send you a cookbook from my collection. I am Chef Emily P. on Instagram and Twitter. You can reach me, chefemily@sharpandhot.com. If you like Heritage Radio Network, please go to heritageradionetwork.org, click on the little beating heart, and donate, because we are a 501c3 supported by listeners just like yourself. Until next week, everybody, thank you so much, and keep playing with fire and knives.
Sharp and hot with Chef Emily.
Sharp.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Hey, it's Francis Lamb, host of The Splendid Table. Every week on our show, we talk about food and cooking and the meanings of food and cooking. We talk with the most interesting people in food about their techniques, their culture, and everything in between. Whether it's about how fried chicken took over the world or how Instagram changes the way people are actually eating. It's a food show where everyone is welcome. Come join us. You can listen to The Splendid Table wherever you get your podcasts.